Good evening. More sanctions against Iran, but are they more of the same? New Yorkers prepare for ICE raids promised by Trump against undocumented persons, and the Democrats face a debate over the environment. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI Evening News for Monday, June 24th, 2019. President Donald Trump announced new sanctions against Iran Monday as part of, in part to retaliate after the downing of a U.S. drone last week, with the punitive measures set to target Iran's supreme leader, military officials, and its top diplomat, Foreign Minister Javad Zarif. Speaking to reporters in the Oval Office, Trump said he signed an executive order imposing hard-hitting sanctions on Iran that will deny Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, his office, and many others access to financial instruments.
Sanctions imposed through the executive order that I'm about to sign will deny the supreme leader and the supreme leader's office and those closely affiliated with him and the office access to key financial resources and support. The assets of Ayatollah Khamenei and his office will not be spared from the sanctions. These measures represent a strong and proportionate response to Iran's increasingly provocative actions. We will continue to increase pressure on Tehran until the regime abandons its dangerous activities and aspirations, including the pursuit of nuclear weapons, increased enrichment of uranium, development of ballistic missiles, engagement in and support for terrorism, fueling of foreign conflicts, and belligerent acts directed against the United States and its allies. The agreement that was signed was a disaster. It was not doing what it was supposed to do. Many bad things were taking place. And most importantly, it was so short-term that within a very short number of years, they would be able to make nuclear weapons, and that's unacceptable. Never can Iran have a nuclear weapon. Also included in this is we want the stoppage immediately of their sponsoring of terrorism. They sponsor terrorism at a level that nobody's ever seen before. And that's been over the last number of years. And they've taken all of that money that was given to them by the past administration, and much of it was given out to terrorist organizations. In fact, I remember when John Kerry was asked a question about whether or not this money will be spent for terror, he actually said yes. Or at least he was referring to some of it, but he said, yes, it will be used for terror. If you can believe that, we're giving him money, we're saying, yes, it can be used for terror. That was not a good answer, but that was the least of it, frankly. So America is a peace-loving nation. We do not seek conflict with Iran or any other country. I look forward to the day when sanctions can be finally lifted and Iran can become a peaceful, prosperous, and productive nation. That can go very quickly. It can be tomorrow. It can also be in years from now. So I look forward to discussing whatever I have to discuss with anybody that wants to speak. In the meantime, who knows what's going to happen? I can only tell you we cannot ever let Iran have a nuclear weapon, and it won't happen. And secondly, and very importantly, we don't want money going out to sponsor terror. They are the number one sponsor of terror anywhere in the world. So I'll sign this order right now, and I want to thank our military. I want to thank all of the people that have been working with me over the last number of months on this. I think a lot of restraint has been shown by us, a lot of restraint, and that doesn't mean we're going to show it in the future. But I felt that we want to give this a chance, give it a good chance. Because I think Iran potentially has a phenomenal future. And I say that about North Korea, too. I've said it about North Korea. I think North Korea has a phenomenal future. And I think Iran also has a phenomenal future. And I would like to, I think a lot of people would like to see them get to work on that great future. So I'll sign this now, and I appreciate you all being here. Thank you.
It remains doubtful whether the restrictions imposed would have any significant impact on Iran's government that largely operates outside of mainstream global business and financial channels controlled by the United States. Iran's foreign ministry spokesperson, Abbas Mousavi, said last week that the U.S. had run out of sanctioned targets. In a video, he added, "Is there any new sanctions that Trump has not yet imposed against the Iranian nation?" Meanwhile, Palestinians burned portraits of President Donald Trump as they protested in both the Gaza Strip and the Israeli-occupied West Bank on Monday against U.S.-led plans for a conference on their economy in Bahrain. Many Palestinian business groups have said they will boycott the June 25th, 26th event, billed as part of Washington's long-awaited Israeli-Palestinian peace plan and spearheaded by Trump advisor and son-in-law Jared Kushner. In the West Bank, hundreds marched through Ramallah's main squares, waving posters in support of President Mahmoud Abbas, whose Western-backed Palestinian Authority exercises limited self-rule in the territory. Protesters there burned posters of both Trump and Bahrain's king, Hamad bin Isa Al Khalifa. A protester who gave her name as Siham in Gaza City said the conference is a comedy show, a wedding without a bride. It will not succeed. In Gaza, a Hamas spokesman said Palestinians will not sell out their rights for all the treasures on earth. And in the United States, two babies, a toddler and a woman, were found dead near the U.S.-Mexican border on Sunday. Authorities say they may have been dead for days before the bodies were discovered in the Rio Grande Valley. A law enforcement official said that four were overcome by the heat after fording the river. And the U.S. government has removed most of the children from a remote border patrol station in Texas following reports that more than 300 children were detained there, caring for each other with inadequate food, water, and sanitation. Just 30 children remained at the facility near El Paso Monday, said Representative Veronica Escobar, after her office was briefed on the situation by an official with Customs and Border Protection. Attorneys who visited the Border Patrol station in Clint, Texas last week said older children were trying to take care of infants and toddlers. They described a four-year-old with matted hair who had gone without a shower for days and hungry, inconsolable children struggling to soothe one another. Some had been locked for 3 weeks inside the facility, where 15 children were sick with the flu and another 10 were in medical quarantine. Government rules call for children to be held by the Border Patrol in their short-term stations for no longer than 72 hours before they are transferred to the custody of Health and Human Services, which houses migrant youth in facilities around the country through its Office of Refugee Resettlement. Meanwhile, with the Trump administration threatening deportation sweeps, New Yorkers are getting the word out about knowing your rights at this uncertain time for immigrants. Linda Perry reports.
Immigrants in our area and throughout the nation were put on notice that a nationwide immigration sweep to deport undocumented people living in the U.S. would be underway. But on Saturday, Donald Trump delayed the sweep. On Twitter, he wrote, "At the request of Democrats, I have delayed the illegal immigration removal process, deportation, for 2 weeks to see if the Democrats and Republicans can get together and work out a solution to the asylum and loophole problems at the southern border." Trump's tweet continued, "If not, deportation start!" Exclamation point. Meanwhile, New York City public advocate Jemani Williams held an emergency Know Your Rights call on Saturday night to alert immigrant families to their rights and what they should do to keep safe. Donna Lieberman, executive director of the NYCLU, says what's clear is that the Trump administration is playing with people's lives and stoking fear. She says it's important to prepare for whenever these raids might occur.
Importantly, the ACLU has materials online, so check the ACLU Instagram or Twitter feed or the NYCLU Instagram or Twitter feed for succinct documents that can give you a whole list of do's and don'ts. The key point, if there's one key point to remember, it's don't open the door to somebody you don't know unless you see a warrant from a court. Not a warrant, but a warrant from a court that has the name of a court on it. ICE issues its own warrants and lies to people, insists that they slip under the door, don't open it for them, a court warrant. And remember, you don't have to answer any questions. You can just say, even if they barge in, you can just say, "I don't consent to them coming in," and you want them to leave. Make every effort to call a lawyer as soon as possible. I want to remind people that Local Law 228 in New York City prohibits the use of any city resources for immigration enforcement. That means that the NYPD should not be there. That means that the NYPD should not be closing off the streets. So if anybody sees that happening ever, they should take pictures and notify the NYCLU. They could notify Moya. They could notify your office, Jemani. Finally, ICE is not allowed in our schools without a warrant for a court looking for a specific individual. They have no right to come into the school and roam the halls. They have no right to come into the school.
Thank you. Just really quick, the information you gave about what the rights are in school, I assume it's a K-12. Is there something similar for SUNY and CUNY?
It's important for college kids and faculty to demand that their institutions take steps to ensure that ICE is kept off campus, that they have that they never be allowed into a dorm, into a building, onto campus without a warrant looking for a particular individual. And even if they have a warrant, to make sure that they are escorted and don't go running rampant.
According to the Immigrant Defense Project, what's key is to keep any and all papers, important or not important, in a safe place. They say people can be rapidly moved out of New York City and deported, so a trail of what happened is needed for deportation proceedings. And they say to be sure to keep paperwork with someone who is safe, who won't be impacted. If you need assistance, call the Immigrant Defense Project, 212-725-6422. Again, that's 212-725-6422. Or go to nyclu.org or the aclu.org, nyclu.org, aclu.org, or go on Twitter to @NYCLU, or Donna Lieberman's Twitter is @JustAskDonna. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
And the state of Illinois has also moved to protect its immigrants in the wake of threats of mass immigration raids. On Friday, Governor J. Robert Pritzker signed a bill making his state the first in the country to ban private immigration detention centers. Pritzker said, "Let me be perfectly clear, the state of Illinois stands as a firewall against Donald Trump's attacks on our immigrant communities. In the face of attempts to stoke fear, exploit division, and force families into the shadows, we are taking action." In New York, despite the passage of a state bill allowing undocumented persons to get driver's licenses, activists say the response outside the city has been hostile. Several county clerks upstate have said they'll refuse to follow the law. Clerks in Erie, Rensselaer, Niagara, and Allegheny counties have said they won't be handing out the licenses despite the legislation signed Monday by Governor Andrew Cuomo. State Attorney General Letitia James has said her office is prepared to defend the measure if it's challenged in court. In New York City, Ravi Ragbir is an immigration activist who's been fighting to remain in the United States even as he leads the struggle for undocumented persons here. He says Trump's threat to begin sweeps this weekend, later postponed for 2 weeks for negotiations with House Democrats, are just the tip of the iceberg.
ICE has always done sweeps. They have not done it to the level that he had tweeted about. But ICE has done drastic sweeps in areas and destroyed many communities. We still have to be ready for the raids that is going to happen no matter what happens.
Do you take seriously the things Trump says or does regarding immigration, or is this something that's coming from another part of the government?
He is being led. He doesn't have the wherewithal to figure this out himself. He's being led by Steve Miller. He's not a nice person. I can say a lot of words about him, but Steve Miller is the one who is leading this charge against immigrants. Even though his own uncle said that if the United States wasn't welcoming refugees, Steve Miller would not have been here. Steve Miller is the mastermind behind all the things that has been happening.
And what do you think they're trying to do? Are they really trying to get everybody living legally or illegally in the United States out who's not an American citizen? That's what it's been said.
I would use the word ethnic cleansing. I don't use that word lightly. I do mean that because if you look at not only Steve Miller, but who he has actually placed in high-level administration roles, and they are the one in charge of the immigration system, which means that he is using them, and the intent is to remove everyone, also totally isolate the United States from anyone being able to enter unless they are of Caucasian background.
What do you expect people to do? What's the response in New York? Is New York doing enough?
New York is not doing enough. What we know, the rumor that they were going to target Long Island because They are much more comfortable in Long Island. They were going to target the Hudson Valley, where they will be received because the community there is not nice. What we need to do is we need to change what is happening. New York City has been mobilizing and has been saying that we will not tolerate the ICE coming in and destroying our communities. What we would want to do is to have the same mindset across the state. How we do that is every citizen needs to start partnering with non-citizens so that if there is a raid, for instance, that non-citizen will be able to call someone who is their partner, who is a friend or a buddy, and that buddy will be able to mobilize the community to record and document what is happening. So we know that the violations, they will be held accountable, and we will be able to stop them from literally disappearing people. That's what I would say as an individual that they need to be doing. And as a community, they need to be holding their own elected officials accountable for being humane and understanding that immigration status is not a reason to treat people like animals.
Mm-hmm. Anything you would like to add, particularly about the law that was just passed to give undocumented peoples in New York their driver's licenses?
You heard that a few county clerks they're saying that they will refuse to issue driver's license to undocumented. The reason why they don't like to do that is because, in their minds, undocumented people with a driver's license will not be so easily identified. Right now, if you look at what is happening in Long Island, upstate New York, people need to get around by driving. But if you don't have a driver's license and you're stopped by a cop, you can easily be detained and ICE will pick you up. If you have a driver's license, that option is taken away. And like I said before, upstate New York and Long Island are full of racism, and they don't like the fact that we are trying to protect non-citizens. What I would also want to say is we do want to send a message to the administration and the agency, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and we're having a major rally on Wednesday at 12 o'clock to tell ICE to keep their hands off our families. And if anybody wants to join us, we will be there. We want to surround the building. We want to march. We want to...
Where is the building? Where is the location?
26 Federal Plaza, right opposite Foley Square.
Ravi Ragbir is an immigration activist who's been fighting to remain in the United States. And New York State Senate Deputy Leader Michael Janaris announced $20,000 in funding for Immigrant Families Together, a Queens-based nonprofit which provides bail for parents in the custody of Immigration and Customs Enforcement and reunites them with their children. Senator Janaris's funding will go to support legal work performed by the organization. And closer to home, a group of Manhattan residents are suing the city in an attempt to block a crosstown busway on 14th Street and bike lanes on 12th and 13th Street. The lawsuit, which was filed by a coalition of neighbors in the West Village, Chelsea, and the Flatiron District, argues that the Department of Transportation's planned busway between 3rd and 9th Avenue violates state environmental law because city officials did not conduct a thorough review of how blocking cars from 14th Street will impact the surrounding area. Local resident Judy Pazin is a member of the 14th Street Coalition.
The busway was proposed by the DOT over a year ago when the L train was going to close and when they were going to have a diesel bus a minute going across 14th Street for the 80,000 people that were supposed to be crowding the streets. That's not happening. The L train is running. How does the busway remain pretty much intact? They've added trucks to it, but it's instead of being 5 a.m. to 10 p.m., it's 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. So it's pretty much unchanged from what it was when the L train was closing, which leads me to believe that it really never had anything to do with the L train. It's about banning vehicles, and the L train was just an excuse. And when the excuse pretty much disappeared, they're still going ahead with their plan. So they're not being open and honest about it. They've set up an 18-month pilot or experiment. Well, who does a pilot for 18 months? What are you going to learn in 18 months that you're not going to learn in 3 months or 6 months? The lawsuit says that the plans are arbitrary and capricious. We haven't seen any data. I took pictures all day yesterday, 6:30, 7:30 in the morning, not a vehicle on the street. This is before the vehicle ban. I went back at 11 o'clock. Hardly, I could count on one hand the number of vehicles that were going through 14th Street around 8th Avenue to 6th Avenue. So where the need for a vehicle ban from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m.?
It's going to have to happen eventually, and with congestion pricing as well now as later.
There are certainly things that are going to happen, but remember, Manhattan's an island. To get things and people on the island, there needs to be some transportation. And 14th Street is one of the few major crosstown streets, right? Houston, 14th, 23rd, 34th. There's not a lot of them. So by banning vehicles on these major streets that are, by the way, have the infrastructure for the heavier volume of vehicles, you're pushing them off the side streets. So our concern is, again, what it was before, a year ago, was that the concern was for the commuters and not the community.
Eventually, within the next couple of years, the way they're going, there's not going to be much traffic at all. Well, I'm just thinking of this big, big fare. They want to charge $10, $15, $20 to go below 60th
right,
Street.
But many people will tell you that's the cost of doing business in New York City. I mean, I don't own a car, so I'm not the one to justify. I don't like the congestion either. Don't get us wrong. But we want to have clear understanding of what these decisions are.
The transparency issue, the city has not done much as far as transparency with the community, you're saying?
I understand the Department of Transportation's role in life is to manage transportation. I get that. But it's got to take into account the impacts on the community. It can't just be for the commuters. Part of this plan eliminated 16 bus stops from the Lower East Side all the way through to the west side of 14th Street in the Village. Is it really just about speeding up a bus? 15 minutes, they said maybe 30%. And they're cutting out, they're making it harder for disabled, for elderly, for people with packages, with children, with strollers, by eliminating 16 bus stops. In fact, they meant to cut off the Abington Square stop entirely. I don't know if you're familiar with the plans, and just have the buses go down to 14th Street and 10th Avenue instead of turning left on, I believe, 9th and going to Abington Square. There was such an outrage from West Bath, which is the artist community that has a number of seniors that have lived there for decades, without any transportation. And so, in fact, the MTA has said, well, they're going to keep it for 9 months while they measure it. But what's on 10th Avenue and 14th Street? Well, the High Line and the Whitney and Google and the tech folks. So who's the change for? Is it really for the community or is it for the tourists and the commuters? You know, we have said even a year ago that we, you know, felt that there was not a balance between the needs of the community and the needs of transportation. And we still feel that that's an issue. We don't feel they've been honest and open. We proposed a ban during rush hour, for example. It's coming from an agenda that they're not being upfront about, which is to eliminate vehicles in New York City. They think they're going to disappear. We think they're going to go to the side streets.
Have you seen any uptick yet?
Offhand, not really. We've certainly seen some big trucks go down. And a week or two ago, we saw three tour buses within an hour come down 13th Street. I don't know what we're going to see, but we don't. The idea of an 18-month experiment is just unwarranted and is uncalled for, as far as we're concerned.
Local resident Judy Passan is a member of the 14th Street Coalition. As Democratic presidential hopefuls prepare for their first 2020 primary debate this week, 74 medical and public health groups aligned on Monday to push for a series of consensus commitments to combat climate change, bluntly defined by the organization as a health emergency. The new climate change agenda released by the groups, including the American Medical Association and the American Heart Association, comes amid jostling among Democratic candidates over whose environmental platform is more progressive. While Joe Biden is ahead of the other Democratic presidential candidates in the polls, some New York environmental groups want to see him take more of a lead on climate issues. When Biden released his climate plan earlier this month, some environmentalists praised him for being a lot more progressive on climate than he has been in the past. Others say he needs to go further to prevent climate catastrophe. But when Wall Street billionaire James Chanos hosted a fundraiser for Biden on the Upper East Side last week, dozens of activists stood outside to make their concerns known. Reva Goldberg reports.
Hey, Joe! Fossil fuels have got to go! Patrick Houston of New York Communities for Change organized a rally on the Upper East Side Monday night along with Food and Water Watch, Sunrise Movement NYC, 350.org, and other climate and social justice groups. The goal was to get Joe Biden's attention while he was in New York to fundraise for his campaign. In a phone interview, Houston said he likes elements of the climate plan that Biden released earlier this month. For example, the commitment to end fossil fuel industry subsidies, reduce pollution from buildings, and ban gas and oil permits on public lands. Houston's major complaint, though, is that he says Biden's goal of 100% carbon neutrality by 2050 will be too little, too late. Instead of trying to neutralize emissions, Houston and other activists want Biden to say he'll ban all new fossil fuel infrastructure.
So carbon neutrality assumes that we will develop enough carbon sinks, that is, technologies or natural systems that suck carbon out of the air and leaves the door open for the fossil fuel industry to continue to extract, transport, produce, and burn their fossil fuels that are destroying our planet.
As Biden arrived at the event, he acknowledged the protesters for a brief moment and addressed one specific point they would like to see him stick to.
So when he hopped out the car, he kind of turned towards us, smiling, and said, no fossil fuel money, which he has already verbally committed to, but has not yet officially signed the pledge. So that was the extent of his engagement.
Houston says he will continue to hold 2020 candidates to the highest standard for a Green New Deal. And each time Biden and others come to town, they can expect local environmentalists to make their presence known and keep the pressure on. This is Reva Goldberg, WBAI News, New York.
And that's some of the news for Monday, June 24th, 2019. The news was produced with Linda Perry and Reva Goldberg. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.